From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made at your door. That's where some of Rochester's best food can be delivered through a new initiative called Curate. Capital A in that word, Curate. During the pandemic, a group of friends watched how the local restaurant scene was struggling, and they wanted to help. So local podcaster Chris Lindstrom and his team joined together to create a business model that highlights some of Rochester's restaurants and showcases a particular cuisine while relieving them of the stress that can come with curbside pickup, the cost of delivery, and more. Each week, Curate delivers mystery meals to homes across the Rochester area. Customers place their orders for the surprise delivery of a two-person meal, and the day of the drop-off, they receive beverage pairing notes from the Curate team if they want to think about being ready to have a drink with the meal. The restaurants receive a payment for each two-person meal in one big order. This allows them to batch make the food and save money on their end. Curate takes all of the customer work and deliveries and paying a fair rate to the drivers. The team says this is win-win. After a successful pilot run, Curate has highlighted three other local restaurants after they started with Marty's. And the three other local restaurants are minority-owned businesses, including Peppa Pot, Zamita, and most recently, El Latino. On their website, the Curate team has this quote. I love this. It's kind of like the food version of the book that's on your shelf that you plan on reading, right? Or you've always wanted to read, or you bought sort of aspirationally. Well, this is the food version of that. This is what they say. Quote, "We want to help you finally enjoy that restaurant you've been saying you should go to for the last 3 years," end quote. This hour, we're talking to Curate, the restaurants they're working with, and the state of the industry during this pandemic. Chris Lindstrom is the force of nature behind all of this, the co-founder of Curate. Welcome back to the program, my friend. It's been too long.
So happy to be here, Evan. It's a beautiful day in Rochester, and so happy to be talking about these cool restaurants.
Well, awesome to talk to you. And Marlene Henry is the owner of Peppa Pot, who is with us. Hi, Marlene. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for including me. Hi.
Well,
it's, nice day for
it's a beautiful day for a radio program, Marlene. Chris Lindstrom, let's kind of go back here a little bit and tell me how this all came together.
Yeah, so the team, this is the same team that I've been working with from Frankly. We were trying to build transparency in food sourcing and distribution. But during the pandemic, things were slowing down. Restaurants are strapped for time, strapped for money, and don't have time to think about extras. So we tried to figure out what would a light pivot be where we could actually benefit smaller restaurants, benefit restaurants that need money, benefit consumers that need something fun delivered to their houses. So, we were brainstorming, and we kind of locked in on this idea where we could work with smaller restaurants, give them a big order all at once on likely what is a less busy night, Wednesday nights every other week, and be able to give them a big order all at once, give them the chance to batch their food, make larger margins, and give them, catering prices. Try to make this a win for everybody. While we're a for-profit business. So this is kind of under that conscious capitalism model.
Yeah, and so I look at this as sort of the food version of the book on your shelf that you order and you go, I'm definitely going to read Walden someday. Which, by the way, spoiler alert, you're not going to read Walden. I've tried. Nobody can read Walden. But there are great books on your shelf that you will get to eventually, just as there are restaurants that you've been thinking, boy, I really want to try this or I really want to try that. But we all have our favorites. We all get into our routines. And I just think this is so smart here. How do you decide who you want to work with here, Chris? And what do you think the future looks like for you?
Yeah, and it's interesting because my mental list of restaurants in Rochester is very deep. So as you mentioned in the beginning, I've been doing podcasting for a number of years. I wrote restaurant reviews in the city newspaper for, 3 years earlier. And my focus in a lot of places, although I went to many, finer dining establishments, my passion has always been with the smaller, diverse, backgrounded restaurants of Rochester. And, I always made an effort to write about those places, talk about them on the podcast. And those are the places I want to focus on the most. And not to say we're not going to be working with finer dining establishments and doing you know, special occasion nights or brunches and things like that. But my focus has been on those kind of places, and it's been my passion for so many years. The list I have right now of places I'm currently targeting is about 40 deep, and including all different backgrounds that I can think of that Rochester has. And it's really exciting.
40 deep.
Yeah.
Yes. 40 deep, and from all the different kinds of backgrounds, stuff that I have. So the place we worked with already were, as you mentioned, Ethiopian, Jamaican, Dominican. Places I have sitting on my list are, and I don't recall this specific country, so I apologize in advance to them, but from different regions of Africa, regional Chinese from Sichuan or Cantonese, Indian, Nepalese, Korean, Lebanese, Syrian, Turkish, Thai, Viet, Polish, Persian, that's in Mexican. That's like just the starting point.
Now, Chris, do you have, you know, when you're not wearing your superhero cape doing curate, do you have like sort of a list of Rochester favorites that even you find yourself in a little bit of a rut, like, let's just go here. Or let's just order from here because you know, they're always going to be great. And do you find yourself even pushing yourself to get out and try new places once in a while? In other words, is this a way to kind of gratify what you have wanted to kind of pursue and continue to explore?
Oh, absolutely. You know, over the past year or so, I've gone 100% vegan. So I found myself hitting specific places over and over again. And one of the things I've been doing over the pandemic times when I've been in Rochester is because falafel is such a great thing. I've spent the time to go to, I think, every place in Rochester that serves a falafel sandwich that I can find. And it's been so, so rewarding to talk to the different people making this food from all the different backgrounds. And that's the exciting part. When we think about something like falafel, we think, that's Mediterranean food, or what some people refer to as Middle Eastern food. Well, now I'm finding, and I was aware of some of these, but places in Rochester that are backgrounded with Afghani, Syrian, Lebanese, Egyptian. There was a Palestinian one, unfortunately, has now closed. And it's been so like revelatory to go through that process and learn more about the backgrounds and how they differentiate from each other. And we want to bring more of that to people as well.
Well, I want to talk to Marlene Henry about the experience here. And Chris, I mean, are you getting to know people like Marlene as you work with them? Are you developing relationships with them?
Oh, and that's absolutely the goal. And what a joy. I'd gone to Peppa Pot a number of times in their old location off of Gregory Street in the South Wedge and now on Main Street. But getting to chat with her and listen to her passion was just a bright light before we went out on a delivery a few weeks ago.
So, Marlene Henry, how long has Peppa Pot been there? Where is it, and how long has it been there?
So, Peppa Pot's been around now for around 11 years. This might be our 12th year. We started in the South Wedge neighborhood, and we kind of outgrew the space. So we decided to come down to this location that was available and was offered to me at the time. You know, so I, big idea to move downtown in the summertime. exciting idea. So we moved downtown just before COVID.
Okay. And can I read a little bit from a review of Peppa Pot, even if it's a little bit of an NC-17 review here, Marlene? Can I read this?
This is
from Nancy O'Donnell in Rochester Woman Online. This is one heck of an endorsement. You ready for this? This is what Nancy writes, quote, "Great meals, just like great sex, are better if love is involved, and especially if the whole experience takes its time. Open the door of Peppa Pot, and you can smell the love wafting from the slow-cooking Jamaican stews and braises from behind the counter." That's pretty good review, Marlene.
That turned me on.
Oh,
Amazing.
Oh,
that's
my
awesome.
God. I'll tell you what. You know, I imagine if I ever owned a restaurant, if someone compared it to Great Sex, what was coming out, that might be the best review possible.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
That made my day.
That is pretty good. So one of the things I understand is that you've been cooking for a long time, all the way back in Kingston, Jamaica. Tell me your first memories of food, Marlene.
My all-time memory is cooking with my mom. My mom was an awesome cook. She made big weekend dinners, Christmas dinners. So I was always there tasting and watching, and I always wanted to just cook a big meal all the time, always wanted to cook. And then I had 5 kids, so I had to cook. I had no choice. You know, my kids love to eat, and I just always wanted to cook a big meal, always trying new stuff and tasting. And I don't like vegetables, so I don't know how that happened.
But. You don't like vegetables?
No.
Not even now?
It's good for me. I eat it, but not my first choice.
It's like the opposite of Chris Lindstrom. Chris. I mean.
Chris. Oh, it kills me, but I mean, the food's so amazing. We still had to get it for everybody.
So you came to Rochester, what, 1989? Is that right?
My brain's not that far, so probably, yeah.
Something like that?
Something like that.
When you think about the food scene in Rochester, Marlene, what do you think about the diversity, or do we need more diversity on the scene? I mean, how do you feel about the food scene in Rochester?
I don't know if we need more diversity. What we need to do is recognize the ones that are here, because as Chris says, he has 40 deep. So they are here. We just need to get them up in the forefront so people know where they are and what they're offering, you know, and help them. Help them do that. This is a big help for me. You know, there's more people out there that knows about me right now. Mm-hmm. So this is amazing.
Peppa Pot, having been around for some time, how much of your customer base are repeat customers who've gotten to know you, and how often are you dealing with new customers?
So within the last year, around since winter, I've had a lot of new customers, the walkers, because my customers from Gregory, they are probably the senior. The office that they used to work downtown in the offices, they come downtown for work or come downtown for events. They no longer come downtown. So they will probably use Grubhub or delivery service or just grab a pickup and go. So dining is no longer hustle and bustle like it was, you know. So now I get the walkers and, you know, basically, that's my customer right now.
Yeah, and Marlene, I don't want to be sort of naive here, but I am hoping that what that means for you is that as hard as the last year has been, a number of people who have never known Peppa Pot have found you, and that maybe when the pandemic really, really subsides, that you've got permanent customers. But I am worried for every restaurant, every bar, every dining facility really everywhere dealing with the pandemic. I mean, was there any time where you thought, I don't know if we can survive this?
Yes, around just before winter hits, because winter is the downhill type, that rut you get in Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. So when September came and I'm like, oh my God, are we going to make it through winter? Nobody's going to come out and people are just not going to want to be bothered, you know, and then they want to close us down for a certain amount of time. And I panicked. I really did. So that's when we got the delivery service. We got Grubhub to help, you know, for the people who don't want to come out. And we've been using them. No choice but to use them right now. But I have hope, and I have the sun shining, and I am feeling good again, you know. Even if they don't want to come out, it's such a nicer time, springtime, and I'm hoping and praying that we can figure some way out to get people involved in the restaurant dining again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. That's my biggest thing, how to get people dining in again.
Yeah, well, I mean, many, many more people are getting vaccinated every single day. I think there's going to be a lot more comfort with dining out in restaurants when those numbers continue to go up. I think people will sit outside. The sun is shining.
Right.
But for you, Marlene, is there have you turned a corner with the business in dealing with this, or is there still a concern that Peppa Pot might not survive the pandemic?
I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I just need to keep going towards it. I am not giving up. I have no intention of giving up. I have a clientele that really, really pushes for me to stay, encourages me to stay, you know. So I keep changing with the times. If we have to figure out how to do more deliveries, how to get the food to people, like Chris, that was awesome. And I work with the Jamaican organization. They have a way where we do meals the same way. So if I have to change with the times, then I will. But this is something that I am never going to stop doing.
Well,
cooking and feeding.
In a moment, I'm going to let listeners know, and we're going to talk to Chris exactly about how they're doing it, how they're reaching people, and frankly, how many people they can handle, because I've got a feeling he might get a few calls. Based on the conversation this hour. But before we do that, Marlene, I do also want to ask you about the way the government has or has not responded. I mean, my feeling, and I've said it on this program, Marlene, is that when you have a pandemic and the virus is transmitted the way it is, I understand why governing bodies want to close or restrict bars, restaurants, certain indoor places where the virus can circulate. What I don't understand is how they do that without giving a backstop and a big support to restaurants or bars or anyone who you say you've got to close down or shut,
right,
pull your business back. How would you grade especially the federal government response to the pandemic in terms of helping businesses survive?
Okay, I don't know if I can give them a grade. People might not like me if I do. What I don't understand is, if you're going to say to me, close your business for the month, and then who pays my bills? Who takes care of my family or my workers' family? There has to be, and they make it so difficult for us to get any kind of help. You know, if we owe taxes, they figure out how to get their money. So why can't they say, okay, you own a business, you're registered, you're paying your taxes, you're doing everything. Here is some help for 6 months, a year. But they make it, the PPP, I didn't even apply. I started to, but then I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. The hoops that I have to jump through and to prove to them that I pay these people or to keep my doors open, it's unnecessary. They don't care. They don't care. It's just political, and I don't want to get involved with it. So I keep my doors open from my own pocket, from my customers coming in, and keep going. And
well, I appreciate how fine a line that is for you to walk. So you brought up Grubhub, Marlene. There's been a lot of conversation in our community about food delivery apps, who's making the money, who's not, how it affects restaurants. Tell me your thoughts about the Grubhubs, and I guess it's Uber Eats, DoorDash, those kind of things.
Well, I did Uber Eats way back in Southwedge, and no, I wasn't going to do with them again because it was such a ripoff. So I decided wasn't to do them again.
How was it a ripoff? To explain to listeners.
So this is one of the things that made me decide not to do them. I had a lot of college students, and I had a special rate for college students. A lot of them were vegetarians, you know, they eat small meals. So I would say, okay, your meal is $8. But they go to Grubhub, and they charge them $16 for the same meal, and then charge them a delivery fee. And they charge me a fee. That's crazy. So that one $8 meal would cost a student something like $21 or more. And I was like, nope, I can't do that. But here I am. I have to use Grubhub because people are still skittish about coming out. And there are some people who actually want to pay a fee. I don't understand that part of it, but everybody make their own choices.
Marlene, do you think the Grubhubs, the Uber Eats, the DoorDashes, do you think that their success will threaten the survival of some restaurants, you know, that it is carving into what restaurants are making, whether the customers know it or not, and they're threatening restaurants?
So if the customers are using them, and I don't know how else to explain it, because people are using it. We have a vibrant Uber Eats, Grubhub Eats customer service. We get Grubhub all day, you know. And we're not fast food, so our meals don't come out in like 5 seconds in the microwave. But the price is when they jack the prices up. If they wouldn't add so much money onto a meal and then charge for delivery and the meals are not there in time, then the backlash comes to us. It's our fault. The restaurant get the calls, you know, the meals were cold or something. And so it's not organized. It's complicated. A customer can call Grubhub and say the food was late, they didn't like it, and they refund the money to the customer. So that's money from our pocket. We don't get that money. You know, so if all day a customer calls and say, I don't want this food, they just take the money and give it back to them. But our food is already out there. So that's a big loss for us, because there's food out there that we're not getting paid for on top of the fees they charge us, on top of the percentage they take from the meal. You know, so it's complicated, and I use it during the winter. I don't know how I'm going to do during the summer, if I'm still going to use them, because it's such a big dip into our little fund. But
sure.
If people are using them, you know, they're going to always benefit, because there's people out there that's calling them.
Well, you heard Marlene's thoughts about the Grubhubs of the world. Chris Lindstrom, I know you've heard that. You're the co-founder of Curate, which is new and is bringing food from restaurants to customers. How do you square the concern about the Grubhubs and food delivery services with the creation of your own?
I mean, I couldn't agree with Marlene more. I mean, to be honest, the usage of Grubhub is insidious at best. No, it's not just Grubhub, it's all of them. The percentage fees and everything else, and the way that the drivers are treated, how little money they can end up earning per hour. To be honest, I kind of find them generally distasteful. Not to say I don't use them occasionally myself, because we all have long days and we need food delivered. But for lack of a better way of saying it, the delivery services are making money on the backs of restaurants. They're making money on the backs of the delivery people. They're not adding value other than convenience for the end customers. And I think they're negatively affecting businesses, negatively affecting their drivers, who are in strong need of money, especially right now when people can't get work. So we're trying to be the alternative to that. And I know we're not large scale and we can't deliver every day or anything like that. But in whatever way we can do it, we want to try not to make money on the backs of anybody. That every step of the way, if we can offer actual value to the restaurants, if we can pay delivery drivers, right now we're doing all the deliveries ourselves and with friends and family. But with the model we've built, we feel that we can pay $15 an hour plus pooled tips to drivers that we're going to be hiring in the near future, deliver a good experience to the customers. And yes, part of the value is that it's exciting. Part of the value is that you're paying one flat fee every time. To be honest, I think there's, you know, the more we can avoid the large delivery services. Okay. And if you're not using Curate, buy from the restaurant directly. Go pick it up. Don't force somebody else to go out and reduce your own risk.
Right.
And I know some people have to, and I understand that. And this isn't a blanket statement, but make the effort. Go out to the places yourself. Buy directly.
Yeah, I take that point. Everybody's circumstances are different, but you're saying if you have it in your power to go out and pick it up on your own, even during this pandemic, that helps the restaurants more than using a Grubhub.
Absolutely. Well, and if you think about the people who are usually making the deliveries, I mean, there's a lot of class issues involved. It's many of us, I'm privileged enough where I could order delivery a lot of times. But most of the time I choose to go out myself. Why should we be putting risk on other people who, one, aren't getting paid well for the risk, and like to, for your own safety? It's troubling morally and ethically in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Chris, I'm thinking of Dr. Stefan Barral and Dr. Vinay Prasad, who've both written a lot during this pandemic about the reality of risk, and they have both essentially said the pandemic is not filled with risk if you're wealthy. The pandemic has allowed people with resources to put all the risk on the backs of the people who don't have resources.
Right.
And whether it's someone who's doing your grocery shopping because you didn't want to be around people, or whether it's food delivery. So that's been something for me and for many people to think about when you're making decisions individually. You could put risk on other people. Is it the moral thing to do? Because that has been the reality of this pandemic. So,
that's been a huge point for sure.
Yeah. So having said all that, Chris, you found Curate, again, C-U-R, capital A-T-E, all one word, online where, Chris?
Yeah, and that's curatemeals.com or at curatemeals on Facebook or Instagram. You can find us there and look at and order one of our future meals or ask any questions to me. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
How many drivers do you think you can hire in the future?
Well, right now we're doing 20 meal deliveries at a time, so we're using 4 or 5 delivery drivers at a time. Like I said, we're using friends and family and ourselves right now, with the goal of we're hoping to do move to every week delivery and then maybe another delivery on that night. So we're hoping to have at least 5 in the near future and hopefully move on to multiple days a week so we could have multiple days. And the amount people will be making per hour is significantly higher than any other delivery app you'd be working for. So that's kind of the hope, is if we can make it a win for everybody, we can feel good about ourselves at the end of the day.
And it's right now it's every other Wednesday?
Yeah, every other Wednesday. Our next one's on the 31st. We're still ramping up. This will be our 5th one coming up. So it's relatively new, and we're super excited about the reception from the customers and the restaurants so far. And we're excited to start doing it every week in the near future and then looking at different options as we move forward.
Marlene Henry, how did it go for you working with Chris and Curate at Peppa Pot?
Well, it's always fun for me to cook big pots of food and package 40 meals. But it was fun. It was a pleasure to meet him and the young man. They were on time and everything went out accordingly. So it was fun, and look forward to doing it again whenever.
Well, it sounds like as long as they're successful, they're going to have a wonderful rotation of places to work with. And, Chris, for people who sign up, it's $25 for a 2-person meal, correct?
That's $25 to the restaurant. $25 to the restaurant, the cost for the consumer is $40.
I'm sorry. I'm doing you no favors.
No worries. I mean,
$40.
We're transparent about this.
$25 for the restaurant. Yes, for the 2-person meal. $40 total. Got it.
Yeah, no, we're completely transparent about the payments and how things work. The money in between is how we're paying, how we're going to be paying drivers, how we deal with, the delivery fees, managing the customers, working on, getting new places. We think if we can get good value to the restaurants where they're giving us, like I said, about catering value for the food, we think it's a great deal for them. It'll be a great deal for the consumers. And we have no reason not to be transparent. We've done cost comparisons to the delivery apps with orders we've made. We think we're comparable value to the customer. Plus, we're delivering stuff that you might not have gone out and gotten yourself. So it's there's added value there as well.
Yeah, and so $40 total there. Do you have people saying, hey, I want to know what I'm getting in advance before I decide?
Yeah, we've had a few requests here and there. Our goal is to get an adventurous clientele, generally speaking.
There you go.
But if people have allergies or have specific requests for information more than anything else, at this point, we're not customizing what we're delivering. But if somebody has a question like, hey, does this meal have beef? Is it vegan? We're going to rotate in vegan food and vegetarian food as well. And we'll tell people ahead of time that, hey, this is going to be a vegetarian option, or hey, this one's going to be extra spicy. But we're happy to provide information, but
sure.
At this point, we're not customizing meals.
Right. And so 2 Wednesdays from now, when you do your next round, are you not allowed to tell us who it's going to be?
Nope, not able to tell you. Everything's going to be a pure mystery. The nice thing is we're giving the pairings ahead of time, but until the food gets to your door, you have no idea what you're getting.
Okay.
And that's, to me, I think one of the great parts about what it is.
I don't know if you know the power of connections, though. What happens if you get 100 orders? I mean, where do you max out and what you can handle, Chris?
Well, I think, to be honest, I think we could do as many as 40. We could probably do 40 deliveries in a night if we stagger deliveries. But we opened a few different deliveries as well. So we opened up the 31st, and we opened two more deliveries after that. And, you know, hey, if we get if there's a lot of demand, we're going to open up more and figure out how to make it happen. Because right now, if we can get more orders to the restaurants that they can handle, all the better. We're trying to make an actual impact on the orders where, you know, $500-$600 or more goes directly in their pockets on a night when they're not that busy.
In a moment here, we're gonna bring in Nathaniel Bishah, who is the owner of Zamita Ethiopian Restaurant, who has been part of the rotation with Curate. But let me ask Marlene Henry, you know, given the fact that we've talked about how Grubhub and their competitors, frankly, kind of carve into what you can make, how do you feel about getting paid $25 per two-person meal when you did it through Curate? Was that a good price for what you were doing?
Attached to it, of course, definitely. That went straight into a pepper pot. Didn't have to worry about cutting it in half. Can you imagine if I had done that for Grubhub? I would only probably made close to $300, you know, after they take all their fees out of it. So that was a big deal.
Yeah, that's criminal because restaurants need the food and, you know, the money in their pockets, and we're not forcing anybody to sign up for contracts. All we're asking is that the food's hot and ready to deliver. That's it.
Right.
All right. So, listeners, I hope you're getting the picture on how Curate aims to work with restaurants across our community, often owned by people of color, often the kinds of places that you've either driven by in the past or you've thought, boy, we should try that sometime. And as Chris Lindstrom, the co-founder of Curate, says, well, now you don't have an excuse. You just sign up, and they will bring it to you every other Wednesday, and maybe if they grow, maybe every Wednesday, maybe on different days here. One more time, Chris, online where?
That's curatemeals.com, at curatemeals on all of your favorite social media applications.
Oh, man, boy, you really sound like you've got that pitch. Chris Lindstrom is with us. Marlene Henry is the owner of the great Peppa Pot. Who is with us. And after we've taken this only break, I want to bring in Nathaniel Bishah, who is the owner of Zamita Ethiopian Restaurant, and you'll hear his story on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we mark 1 year since police encountered Daniel Prude on the streets of Rochester. How has his death impacted our community and individuals and people who are seeking change? What is Daniel's law? How would it change our community? We'll talk about the impact and legacy of Daniel Prude on Tuesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've been talking to Chris Lindstrom, the co-founder of Curate, and Marlene Henry, the owner of Peppa Pot, a Rochester restaurant that's been there for more than a decade, and they've been in the rotation with this new meal delivery service, sort of mystery meals every other Wednesday, from this wonderful rotation of Rochester establishments. And one of them is Zamita Ethiopian Restaurant. Had a chance this morning to briefly talk to its owner, Nathaniel Bishah, and we welcomed him to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me know. I really appreciate it.
Tell me a little bit about Zamita.
Oh, Zamita Ethiopian Restaurant, we started the business more than 8 years. As our traditional Ethiopian food, we just mixed our South Clinton Avenue, that area, because we have different kind of restaurants, Japan, Italian, you know, so why we don't open the Ethiopian restaurant on this street? So we just open it. Everybody love it. The neighborhood, they support us. That's the way we start as the Mid Ethiopian restaurant.
When you offer Ethiopian food, how authentically Ethiopian is it? How close is it to what you know from your own family and traditions?
Yes, we serve the original one. No, like some people, they say, oh, people, they don't like spicy. Oh, I'm sorry. We serve as it is, like Ethiopian. We don't make any difference. Like, this is the original one.
And what kind of spice are we talking about? What is Ethiopian food for our listeners who don't know it very well?
Oh, the Ethiopian food, most of them, they are very popular, like vegetarian things, you know, the people who are vegan. So we got different kind of like vegetables, lentils, and we use some our Ethiopian spicy, which means we call it berbere. So that's the things. And we are our traditional bread. We call it injera. People, they call it sometimes spongy bread, but that's a gluten-free homemade bread.
The injera is sort of something that you can use to scoop up the food, according to city newspaper, yeah?
Right, that's true.
What is your favorite dish that you serve?
Oh, the favorite food I serve, I like the veggie platter because it's like more than 9 different things, so you could get a lot of vitamin, protein for different things. So I love the veggie platter.
How supportive has the Rochester community been of Zamita?
Oh, my God. Like I would say, like our family, everybody support us very well, especially this pandemic time. You know, they support us even everything. You know, the idea, they bring masks, everything. These very good people, they support us very well.
Are your customers appreciative of your efforts to offer truly Ethiopian food, or do you have some customers who ask you to, there's a word we use. We Americanize food, if that makes sense to you, Nathaniel.
Yes, yeah. When we start, like at the beginning of the month, people, they say, no, America, maybe they love, they don't like I said earlier, they don't like spicy, make it milder or something. I said, no, I'm not going to change our traditional food. I'll serve like as it is, you know, back home. So you're right. They ask me, people make it Americanized, but we just serve the original one.
Nathaniel, what is your first memory of food?
Oh, the first memory, you know, the first, it's not mine, but my son, the first time when he tried the injera with shiro, that is I'm very wondering, my son, he loved it. He almost finished the plate. That's the big memory.
And for now, there's been a challenge for restaurants to deal with COVID, to deal with the pandemic. How have things been for you?
Oh, it's very hard. It's because, our employees, they don't work because of the pandemic. Well, just we have me and my wife, we work in the kitchen and the front. Nobody support. It was very hard, the first thing. And plus, the customer, they're waiting you to serve the food. You know, it takes longer than before because we don't have enough people to work in the kitchen. And plus, you know, it's very hard every single day when I go back home. You know, I have a kid. I'm scared. Maybe I have a pandemic and I have to separate my clothes, everything, you know, before we give them a hug. You know, that's the hardest part. Plus the, it's a lot of, it was like a bad years, you know?
Absolutely. Well, we're talking to Chris Lindstrom from Curate today, and he has a lot of praise for what you do, and he is excited to work with a wide range of restaurants to allow people to order meals and maybe try something they haven't tried before. Are you eager to work with someone like Chris? Are you happy to see that coming together to offer new customers a chance to try your food?
Yes. First of all, I would like to say thank you because they help us as a big deal. Is like they support our back. You know, I don't expect. You know, he comes and talk to me about this thing. It was a great thing. It's financially a good support. Plus, you know, to show the country, the people of the never trying our food, because he served them. You know, our love. You know, I'm very happy to share our traditional food. You know,
absolutely. And when things are back to normal, Well, I mean, even now, I'm sure you'd love to see people. Where are you located, Nathaniel?
Our location is 1015 South Clinton Avenue. It's across Salvatore Pizza. That's the address we are.
Well, I'm thrilled to talk to you, and I wish you the best of luck. I know this has not been an easy year, but thanks for making time to tell us about what you're doing at Zamita, and good luck to you, Nathaniel.
Thank you. I would like to say one thing.
Yeah.
I would like to, this is a good thing I got this chance. I would like to say thank you, our support, all customer, all people, you know. I would like to say thank you, and thank you for your help me too.
That's Nathaniel Bashaw, owner of Zamita Ethiopian Restaurant. Chris Lindstrom, co-founder of Curate, which is a new meal delivery service aimed at bringing more Rochesterians and more customers to more restaurants. So what do you think of Zamita, Chris?
I mean, what a great place. And also, Nathaniel and Zamita are just really, you know, genuinely nice people. And it was such a pleasure to work with them. You know, bringing food like that to people, where, you know, at first blush, it sounds so different. But if I can get across the fact that, you know, these are all small families running these amazing businesses and getting us such, you know, delivering home food. And as they've mentioned, this is food made from their heritage. This is food made they want to make. They want to give to the people. And you can taste that. You know, this isn't commercial food. This isn't made on an assembly line. It comes across when you talk to Zamita, you talk to Nathaniel. They're just genuine people trying to do the absolute best they can.
Marlene Henry is the owner of Peppa Pot, who we've been talking to as well. And when people ask about what your food is and what it represents, what is your food all about, Marlene?
It's a taste of my culture, the sauces, the soups, the jerk chicken. A lot of people would eat it and they'll come in, oh, I feel like I'm in Jamaica right now. You know, it's the spices, like Nathaniel says, we have to stick to our original flavor so that when people eat the food, if I'm going to Ethiopia now, I want to go to that restaurant. So when I go to Ethiopia, I'll be knowledgeable. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to Americanize our food. So when people eat it and they go to the country, they say, well, we had good jerk chicken, we had good rice and beans, or, you know, and I do have vegetarian options, and most of my food is gluten-free. You know, we don't do a lot of, we use our natural spices and stuff to season our food. So it's healthy, and it's available every day, Tuesday to Saturday. Right now we had to close Sundays because we didn't have the staff. And it's a nice vibe. It's a nice vibe, and we stick to our culture. And everyone's welcome to come on in.
Talking to Marlene Henry.
A lot of laughter.
Yeah.
A lot of laughter in that place.
It just feels that way, Chris. It really does feel that way. What has the feedback been from your, you know, roughly, what, 20 customers on every other Wednesday so far on average? Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, customer feedback's been really great so far. We've had a lot of repeat customers, which has been great. We've had people giving it as gifts to people to reach out and, you know, tell them that they're thinking about them, which was, to be honest, a little unexpected, but been a really nice thing that a number of people have done. And, you know, working with the restaurants has been great as well. Getting that feedback from Nathaniel, from Marlene was really buoyed our spirits and kept us moving forward. And from Tony at El Latino as well. You know, that place is so busy, but the fact that we were able to give him another order was really delightful. And I think that point that was brought up with personnel is so honestly true. I've reached out to a number of smaller places, and even though they're so interested in working, they've had trouble with personnel because of the pandemic, because, you know, families are not in town anymore. And it's been troubling, and seeing some places, even we had a place that we were planning on working with that ended up closing their doors. So it just, you know, reiterated how much we want to keep on doing this and try to make as much a difference as we can.
How concerned are you, Chris, about restaurant closure based on the pandemic?
I mean, hugely, especially in these kind of places. You know, there are a lot of these places are running with very small crews, like Marlene and what Nathaniel said. They're down to two people. They're down to two people trying to do as absolute much as they can to keep the doors open. And I'm sure, and from what I've heard from other places, this seems to be pretty similar across the board. You know, dining rooms closed or making the difficult decision to reopen your dining room. I don't envy that decision that any restaurant has to make right now. And your point that, you know, they're essentially forced into doing that or giving up a significant revenue without backing. Is completely on board.
Yeah. If I could ask both of you about something that's been on my mind since a conversation with the team from Supernatural Lake last September, their concern being a team that generally operates in Manhattan, they are seeing widespread closures. We're talking permanent closures. And the warning they offered last fall was, if we are not careful, Rochester, New York City, Chicago, everybody is going to be left with some survivors in the restaurant and bar industry, some that close permanently, and likely it's going to be heavily weighted in favor of the chain restaurants. Yeah. So the chain restaurant, I'm not disparaging people who work in chains. Those jobs are jobs, and there are some wonderful chains. But if all we have left are fast food joints and P.F. Chang's and whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, and we lose the Peppa Pots and the Zamitas, and I just don't know what that land, if that's a landscape that we should all, nobody should want that, Chris. I mean, that my concern is that could happen, that we could see the chains really profit from this and the individual small family owned really hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a terrifying outlook, to be honest. I found so much joy exploring Rochester, and, you know, trying to go to all these places forces you to go explore the city that you live in, to talk to people, to learn more about it. Without that, and no offense to Henrietta, but there's, you know, amazing restaurants of a huge amount of backgrounds in Henrietta. But, I mean, if you're just going to the chains in Henrietta, you're missing out on so many, sorry to use the term, so many connections you can make by talking to people and experiencing experiencing their passion. It's an inspiring way to eat and explore where you are.
Yeah, I've had to spend a lot of time in Henrietta lately for reasons out of my control, and that's a whole other conversation.
But at the same time, Henrietta is also the home of Malaysian food, traditional
there's very good
dumplings, Indian food.
No, I'm just more upset that it's still illegal to do anything but drive a car there.
yeah, basically.
Very strong penalties. Marlene, how do you feel about the possible closures of restaurants and the survival of chain restaurants?
That was one of my thoughts, just like you said. They're going to be only chain restaurants left because they have the wherewithal, the CEOs who will just put their paperwork through, don't have to worry about it, you know, and they get the help. They're the first to get the help. And so we, at the bottom, get no help, so we are forced to close. And that's sad. If all you can eat is burgers and pizzas and, you know, frozen food, then they worry about our health, you know. So it's just going to be one boring community. That's all right. Because no more festivals, no more, you know, outdoor activities. You just walk into an air-conditioned, fine dining, frozen food place and eat. Basically, that's all that's left. Mm. Are going to be left.
If we're not careful. If we're
right.
Yeah, I hear that.
So this is an amazing program. You know, I'm grateful and I'm thankful that Chris came up with such a genius idea, because we have to try and keep mom and pops alive. You know, we have to keep the flavor in the community. We have to. So whatever we have to do, anything that I can do, I'm happy to help.
That's wonderful. And this is not, as Chris has said, this is not an act of charity. For him, it's an act of capitalism. And he's choosing
Absolutely.
Places that people are going to be thrilled to have dinner from. Hey, before I let you go, Chris, Michael writes to ask, can you ask Chris what are his favorite vegan restaurants?
Oh, boy. Places I've been ordering a lot from. I've been ordering from, like I said, a lot of the Levantine places, ordering from Cedar. I'm excited. I haven't gone back to, why am I forgetting a place on Park Ave? You know, it's
Red Fern?
Red Fern. I haven't gone back to Red Fern in a while. The other place, Swan Dive and New Ethic Pizza, you know, they've been doing a great job. And to be honest, a lot of places are open to serving you things that are vegan if you're willing to ask and work with them. It's been actually really enlightening to see that here in town.
Well, I'm grateful for the time here. And Marlene, as the owner of Peppa Pot in Rochester, one more time, let listeners know where you are and how to find you.
Well, Peppa Pot is on, it's 522 East Main Street, right at the corner of Sayo and East Main, just below the School of Music and the YMCA. And we are open Tuesday to Saturdays from 11:30 until 6. Hopefully we can do better with time as things get better. Right now we have very limited dining, and we do have some vegetarian options. And come on down and have some fun with us.
And 15 seconds, what should I order when I go?
Are you vegetarian?
I'm not.
Oh, oxtails, jerk chicken, rice and peas, cabbage, plantain, fried dumpling, beef patties, vegetarian patties. Are you hungry?
I am hungry, Marlene. I am hungry. And by the way, I've got much love for my friend Chris Lindstrom and veganism. I've been moving in that direction, but then you know, you go to Peppa Pot, and I'm like, how? I don't know if I can walk away yet.
You can get vegetarian options.
It's hard to turn off.
I know it. Marlene, thank you for spending the hour with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you. You guys have a wonderful day. Enjoy some of this sunshine.
You got it. Peppa Pot, Marlene Hendry. Our thanks to the folks from Zamita, Nathaniel Bashaw, and Chris Lindstrom, co-founder of Curate. One more time, online where, sir?
Find us CurateMeals.com, at CurateMeals on social media. If you're interested in buying, if you're interested in driving or working with us, reach out to me.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Rob Braden, engineer, Mega Mac producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow.